NHL coaches, like, why aren't they wearing running shoes on the bench? Why can't they wear running shoes?
I think some do. Well, we've got an NHL coach in the line. Bring him in. Let's ask him.
All right. He's been around for a while. Former Maple Leaf head coach. Now longtime Winnipeg Jets head coach. He's got a new deal in Winnipeg. Here's Paul Maurice. Paul, have you ever worn running shoes on the bench in the NHL?
Yeah, once, I think, and it was for the outdoor game, and I just couldn't get around it. Always right. There's a bunch of guys that do. Like Tommy Webster used to wear the black Reeboks. Oh, might even remember that. It's just not a good look in a suit. Like, it just doesn't work. I couldn't pull it off.
Yeah, it's a tough move. It's a very tough move. But like a coach, I guess sometimes they'll pan from above, right? And they'll catch your shoes, but...
No, but I'm telling you, truly, this is a true story. Jimmy Rutherford, I'm looking for some advice when I get my first job as a head coach for the Detroit Junior Red Wings. And I'm thinking I'm going to get something really profound out of him, you know? And he says to me, wear good shoes. Now, I'm just staring at the man. Now, we're talking about a guy that's in a Hall of Fame as a general manager, so we know he knows what he's talking about. And he says he remembers being a goalie in Detroit, and I won't mention the coach's name, but he's standing in front of him, chewing everybody's butt right off. And all Jimmy could think of, the guy looked like a slob because his shoes looked terrible.
So yeah, you don't take the guy seriously.
So he said, make sure you wear good shoes. And I try to, just on that alone. I think he's right.
It's pretty good advice.
No running shoes, man. I can't do it.
Okay.
It's good advice because you think about it. Most of the time when a coach is walking through the locker room, they're not like, they're just heads are down a little bit. You see the shoes. And if you got a garbage pair of dress shoes on, you're going to think the guy's a clown.
Yeah, he's not professional. He doesn't get his operation tight.
Yeah.
That's right.
I always brought that up a bunch of times. Like, we won't name the guy, but there used to be a coach that would wear, like, garden gloves on the ice during practice.
Sure. Yeah, Ronnie Wilson.
Okay.
Well, you got to get to a level of Scotty Bowman before you can pull that off.
Yeah. Well, he lasted 2 months.
Well, when I'm coaching the Junior Red Wings, Scotty Bowman's coaching the Red Wings, and I used to go out and watch his practices all the time. And he's standing on the side of his, a true story. You know those kind of horns on New Year's, those kind of silver horns that you blow? Well, he's using that to change lines. So, like, there's like 11 Hall of Fame players on the ice, and this guy's got a party favor that he's doing to get them to change their lines. And that was another reminder for me, don't ever, ever try that until you got about 6 Stanley Cups in the bank.
Yeah.
He's the only guy that could pull off Lang skates, gray dress pants, and a party favor to change lines.
Mo, you got your new deal done. Congrats on that. How does that transaction go down? Is that through just you and the owner? You got an agent that does that?
Yeah, I don't use an agent, and I haven't more because, as you know, I'm in my first 4 or 5 over the gym, and it was a pretty simple deal. So we met at the over the course of the summer, and the idea was, we all wanted it to happen. I wanted to be the coach, and then we, you know, might happen in September. And then, as you guys saw, kind of all hell breaks loose, right? Buff leaves, and we just had a whole host of things. So it was never really a concern. And then it just kind of got tied up around the All-Star break. But there wasn't a whole lot of time to it put into it. They kind of said what they wanted to talk about in the deal. I told them what I wanted. They made one offer. I accepted, and that was the end of it.
That seems pretty easy. I mean, that works.
In truth, Brian, seriously, so this is my fourth contract with Winnipeg. As far as negotiations, the entirety would have been about 10 minutes on all four.
Wow.
It's just they're really fair and they're right on, and it was easy deals.
With Paul Maurice, who again has a new deal in Winnipeg, you've mentioned a couple of guys that you used to look up to and you'd look to for advice, and Scotty Bowman and Jim Rutherford. Are you still either seeking out advice, or are you still trying to learn and pick up on different things from other coaches and other members of the hockey world?
I would say more now than ever. Like, this game changed drastically in 2006, but the players have changed drastically in the last 4 or 5 years, and that also coincides with, over time, your network gets bigger. Pete DeBoer is as good a friend as I have. He's got lots of NHL experience. There's lots of guys out there now that I've coached with. So we are reaching out, trying to find new ways to reach these guys, make sure that you know, our styles and the evolution of the game. So many things are changing so fast that you've got to change and you've got to be aware of what's going on out there. And you do. You need people to bounce ideas off and people that you trust.
Mo, there's always ups and downs, but can you remember a year where there's so many drastic kind of ups and downs, almost with every team? It seems like seven-game heaters and then seven-game losing streaks, and it's all throughout the league. Can you remember seeing anything like it, and what do you think's behind that?
I don't know the answer. The easy one would be if we've got this kind of parity thing going on in the NHL that we're all fairly close to each other and you lose one or two or three guys off your team, you could be in a world of trouble really, really fast. So I think that may have something to do with it. But I don't think I don't know the answer, but I agree 100%. When I look at all of the things that have just happened to our hockey team, like I got 10 seasons worth going on, right? From all the changes we had this summer, then the guy that you thought that was absolutely going to have to anchor your blue line doesn't come to training camp. Man, we had car accidents. We had people leave for other leagues. We've had cancer diagnosis. We've had just a whole host of things packed into this year. And the injury that we faced, I've never seen a year like this before.
Paul, I want to go back and jog your memory. What was it like to coach 21-year-old Jeff O'Neill?
Well, you know what? I was talking to somebody earlier today about the difference between the rookies then and the rookies now. And the biggest change by far, when O came into the league, in a lot of ways, the players handled him, right? Like, his mentors weren't me as the head coach. His mentors were Shanahan, who was probably on his left wing for a while. He had Nelson Emerson there, but it's Andrew Castles. Those are the guys that are teaching him the game and all the things around the game. And the coach is involved in the team game and motivating the team, maybe talking to a guy as an individual, but it is way different now, right? These young guys come in with a version of their entourages. They got five or six people that are very involved in their daily lives and the opportunities they should be given and all that. So it's a way different animal. You're more involved individually with these young players because and what's also different is for Ole, young players didn't come in and make an impact because they couldn't. They weren't physically strong enough. I mean, it was a grinding game, right? Like, I remember Joe Thornton playing in Boston, and Pat Burns was getting beaked because Joe was on the fourth line and playing about 6 minutes a night, and Pat said, listen, this kid's not ready to play. I think Joe was only about 200 pounds at the time. He said he's got to put on another 20 pounds before he can play with the men. So it was much harder for a young player in Jeff's age to come in and make an impact. Like, if you took him now with the skill set that he had, because he had a great shot and he could really, really efficient, smooth skater, he would have been a star very early and a big producer in this game now.
There's more than 20 put on, though, now, Paul.
But you hide it so well. You hit it then, too. So that was pretty good.
Well, another commonality is, you know, Ole loved sitting in his room playing video games 25 years ago. You'd never hit the town. You'd never have to worry about him on the road or anything.
No, but you know what? They wouldn't have let him then. Like, he wouldn't have been able to get away with that. He'd have been pulled out of that hotel room. Come on, you're going out. Like, it was a different time. So there are things that are much better about the game now, for sure. And then there's a bunch of things that we miss about the game. Like, the players needed each other more than, like our fourth line when O was there, we had Daniels, Jansons, and Chase, right? Like three tough, tough players. If you lost two or three games in a row, those guys started worrying about their jobs. And they were in that room and part of that room. So they were protecting, we got to get it going here because these guys might be in trouble. And they'd be in, the first 10 minutes of that game, two of them were getting into a fight. But there was a connection between the players back then that was different that we do miss a little bit now.
With Paul Maurice, you've detailed what you guys have gone through as a team all year. We've been talking about it consistently ever since the first day of camp. How do you try to use that as motivation as opposed to a distraction? It's got to be difficult.
Yeah. It started this summer, so you lose three of your defensemen and Brandon Tanev. So you know you've got a hole back there, but you know you can lean on Buff. You got Morrissey. You think Pionk's going to come in. And then you got Kulikov there, but you got a couple wild cards, Niku Pullman, some of these other guys, and then Buff leaves. So now you've got a real focus on, fellas, we got a real hole back here, and we got to fix it. So you really need, your drivers. So let's just look at Scheifele and Wheeler. Both of these guys, big point guys. Wheels has 2 years of 91 points. They're going to have to make a sacrifice in their game for us to have any chance. So that was the critical piece. And then we took another big hit. So Brian Little goes down. He's played seven games for us. Now I got to take Wheeler and put him at center on a different line without the firepower that he's used to playing with. So there's a big hit. Proud guy. Gets paid well and wants to produce for this team, so he makes that sacrifice. Now, Mark Scheifele's going, I've just lost my wingman, who I was really, really good with, and Patty Liney's great, but he's young, and Kyle Connor's young. So all of these kind of, the Josh Morrissey lost his partner, so our leadership all had to make kind of that big sacrifice, and that is the tipping point for our team. Were we going to survive that? So they bought in. We got to grind a heck of a lot harder. We're going to have to defend. We're not great at it. We know that. So we got to put a lot of energy into it. It means most of these guys' point production is going to come down, and that's a sacrifice. And listen, it's on TV every night. These guys are proud guys. They want to put up numbers. They want to win. They want to produce. So it is a sacrifice for them. And then keeping the faith. That's been the challenge for us, because we got 6 to 8 guys out of our lineup. Seemingly for the last month and a half, we lose 4 in a row going into the break. So the emotions are down. And now we've come out of the break and played as hard as we've played all year. I'm glad we won some games just for that payoff alone, so you can kind of keep the faith. But I guess if we're looking at the silver lining, is we still got a real young team here. And if they can learn how hard you got to grind for us to just have a chance to win, when you look at the timing of the trade deadline, we're not going to make one trade up front and get 3 top 9 forwards back. We'll get Perreault. We hope we get Brian Little back, and we're going to get Adam Lowry back, and that's going to change our forward group. So the reinforcements are kind of on the horizon. We still got 2 really important weeks before they probably get back to us, but we just got to get them to keep the faith long enough so we can get a little bit healthier.
Well, we're all rooting for you here in Toronto. We look forward to seeing the rest of the journey out there in Winnipeg. Best of luck, and congrats on the new deal. We always appreciate you finding time for us.
All right, guys. Thanks very much. Have a great day.
There he is, Paul Maurice.
If you ever shake your head when I ask a question, I'm going to give you the stone cold stunner right on this desk.
For what?
I said about the new deal with Paul, and you were like,
"Well, because here's no, here's no, I'll, no. Get, I'll just give you the
again,
explanation.
You get a stone cold stunner.
I'll give you the explanation because he was. I wanted to ask him. I wanted to leap off the answer he was just giving.
Okay, well, you didn't. I asked the next
exactly.
Question.
Yeah.
So if you shake your head again, it's stone cold stunner, and your forehead goes off the glass.
Okay, try it. Do you know
I'll
what I'll
jump
do to
on
you
the
in
table
return?
And I'll
go ahead, give it a shot, because we'd go viral. It would probably be great for the show.
That's good.
I actually give you permission to give it a shot. I'll stop you in midair with a rock bottom.
You guys have been asking really good questions in the interviews so far.
Well, you haven't
John.
Asked anything,
yeah,
so we kind of have to.
Yeah, because you're carrying it. I don't need to.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my view.
Paul Maurice is always an unbelievable interview.
You know, that's a good point, because I think you're doing nothing, but if you have nothing good to say, then just sit there.
No, I have lots of good questions to ask, but you had they're questions, right. So I let you ask them, and they were good.
I had to wave off Jonas a couple of times. He didn't threaten to put me in a camel clutch. Professionalism.
It was going to be the people's
case
elbow.
Dismissed.